For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Confederations Cup Football Daily, because it's June. On the way, Sunday's action in Rio and Recife. Yes, we Maracanã for Italy against Mexico, and Spain proved to puny earthlings once again that all resistance is futile. Next up, if you can't stand Tahiti, get out of the living room before Monday's game comes on, because it features top atoll-bothering Cinderella and grass skirts phenomenons themselves against Nigeria. Could be close, this one, unless Nigeria turn up for it. In other news, Italy-Spain in the under-21s final, plus the return of Joe Kinnear. The news that almost relegated everything else to secondary interest. Can he now have a similar effect on Newcastle? That and more in today's Confederations Cup Football Daily. Right, well, show two, off we go. And here on board, we've got Saucy Pirating's James Horncastle.
That's me, particularly for Tahiti. Got my grass skirt on.
Yes. Yep. Have you been shimmying up a few coconut trees? Hey, that's all our research gone in the first minute. Cripes. And also here, Simon Burnton.
Yes, I am.
Hey, and Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Or, as they say in Tahiti, Ari Glendenning and Simon Erton.
Because there's no B, as we've established.
Yep. Extraordinary, isn't it? Which means your wife's birthday today would be a real issue, Simon.
Yeah, we'd be
Mrs.
stuck.
Mrs. Burnton.
Happy Earth Day to you.
Yeah, it wouldn't
that
wouldn't fly, would it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, then. Did everybody enjoy Sunday's game?
This is Lord of Arlocks.
Catching. Ah, joy. Did you enjoy Sunday's games, Barry?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, terrific.
Very entertaining. I think I enjoyed the first one more.
Right.
Because I didn't fall asleep for the last 5 minutes of that, but I did fall asleep for the last 5 minutes of the second one.
So did you miss Suarez's goal?
I woke up this morning to discover that Luis Suarez had scored a magnificent free kick.
Yeah, it was his misfortune that he scored at the wrong end of the day because Pirlo had already grabbed everyone's free kick love.
Which was your favourite?
Well, Pirlo's.
Pirlo's.
Yeah. But in general, it's just been a great start to the tournament. Here's the 16th Beatle saying the Confederations Cup is strange, better than the Africa Cup of Nations and international friendlies. Not quite the Euros, they say, but I don't know, I'm really enjoying it, especially its compact nature.
Yeah. I remember the World Cup in 2010, kind of kicking my heels and waiting for the sexy free kicks to arrive. And they never really did. I think there was just, maybe two or three direct free kicks scored in that tournament. And I'm not sure, is this ball that they're using now, is that also going to be in use next year?
I don't know, but there doesn't seem to have been any complaints about it.
No complaints about it. And
a beach ball on the
Copacabana.
Yeah,
you can get up over the wall, back down again. Mm. That's what we ask of a ball.
Is a sexy free kick a special thing for you, Sam? I'm asking.
I think that it's something you want from a World Cup.
Yeah.
You want a good ration of sexy free kicks. And a World Cup that doesn't deliver that hasn't fully delivered.
Well, yeah, it's 2010. Certainly didn't, did it?
Didn't quite get there.
No, but eight teams. I mean, I don't think anyone's sitting there thinking, God, this would be a really great tournament if there were 32 nations out there. It's nice, isn't it? There's no waste and stuff. Just a little bit of fun there with Tahiti and then some proper nations.
Yeah, yeah. Plucky little Tahiti, we will be patronising in due course, I'm sure. We've already mentioned coconuts and stuff like that.
Right, we had a reference to Captain Blythe. Well, you were talking about pirating and stuff. And
Captain Lythe.
Yeah, Captain Lythe, as they called him in Tahiti. And, of course, the irony was that his men had their mutiny after meeting the Tahitians, and Nigeria have already had theirs.
The Tahitians are nicknamed the Iron Warriors, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah.
By who?
By themselves.
Okay, good for them. Good for them. Anyway, let's get on to Sunday's action. And Maracanã was the venue as Italy took on Mexico. How about the Azzurri? They looked confident. They looked relaxed. They looked attractive. Simon?
I thought they looked okay.
Oh.
I wasn't getting wildly overexcited about them. Ah. They looked solid at the back, one horrible mistake apart. They didn't create a great deal. They seemed to have... They had the dink over the defence, which they used a few times and might have profited from... there was a penalty incident that involving Balotelli that nothing came of. And they had... Otherwise, they attacked largely on the wings, a lot down the left, and none of those crosses came to anything at all, really. There was an early low cross that led to another penalty incident, but that's your lot. They had a lot of set pieces.
That's the sound of me deflating gently.
Yeah. They had a lot of set pieces, a lot of corners, and none of those came to anything either. So they had possession, and they kind of looked okay, but...
Poor Jimbo, the look on your little face.
I'm melting like that witch after they threw the bucket of water on her.
Well, I would disagree, if it makes you feel any better. I thought Italy were very impressive, but slightly toothless up front.
Yeah,
and I think they should have been out of sight by half-time. They wasted so many chances. I was really entertained by the first half. I thought it was great.
Mm. James?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the plan with Prandelli, is to dominate possession, to always go and look for the win. You know, they went into this tournament in indifferent form. You know, they drew with the Czech Republic, they drew with Haiti. Mm. But as always is the case with Italy, they turn it on in competitive games.
Not always the case, but you know.
Well, yeah, certainly under Prandelli, they've only lost one competitive game under him, and that was the Euro 2012 final. But as I think, as Simon was saying, if you look at the goals that Italy scored, one was a free kick, and one was you could say a similar individual effort from Balotelli because he held off.
Oh, but a brilliant flick on from Giaccherini, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. That was fairly special, but fairly route one as well. Well, that wasn't completely route one. It was two.
I just
flicks.
Thought that, yeah, the interplay, the way that Giaccherini, his decision making possibly wasn't the best, but they just showed a lot of attacking intent and a lot of. It was just all nice and clean and fast and no dithering this time.
Yeah, and I think they played a different system for the first time yesterday because they've usually played 4-3-1-2 under Prandelli. They had similar problems at the beginning of the Euros and went to 3-5-2 and then went back to that system. But because El Shaarawy hasn't been doing that well, and Gilardino is kind of too similar to Balotelli, they just played Balotelli and played two players behind him, two midfielders like Giaccherini and Marchisio. And I think that allowed them to dominate the ball. And I mean, they're very easy on the eye team, Italy. They're great to watch. I think
certainly are. No Rudian or bearded geniuses. I don't care if you're gay, straight, both or neither. If you don't find at least one of the Italian 11 attractive, you're either dead or lying. How about that?
Yeah. Well, Pirlo, I mean...
Pirlo!
I think, to go back to him, it was his 100th appearance.
Yes.
At the Maracanã, which has this mythology, just like, you know, I guess Wembley does. And he apparently had called the free kick. He said, he was asked afterwards, how did you imagine today's going? He said, well, I imagined that I'd score a free kick, and I did. And that was it. So
brilliant.
That's just what he can do.
Two great Pirlo moments in that. Well, three. Well, obviously, one was the free kick. That wonderful pass when he ran away from goal to catch up with a loose ball, and with his first touch, sent it going back the other way perfectly for the onrushing Balotelli, I think it was.
Yeah.
That was extraordinary. And then when he did that third free kick, the director really nailed it. He basically zoomed in on his eyes. And then he had a two-minute close-up of Pirlo looking from the ball to the goal. And you could just see, this is how Pirlo takes a free kick. Just imagine the internal monologue. Marvellous. Speaking of internal monologues.
Why is Marchisio played out of position by Prandelli in the Italian team?
I don't think he is generally, but you're right in that yesterday, certainly, he was playing further forward behind the striker with this Giaccherini. He's a jack of all trades, really. He's always been kind of slotted into various different positions, different roles for Italy. Like when they played at the 2010 World Cup, he was used as a trequartista behind the striker, which, you know, he's usually someone who benefits from being alongside Pirlo, and have another central midfielder the other side, and he gets into the box and usually scores goals. But I think he's having a bit of a difficult moment at this time because there's a lot of speculation about his future. He's tired. He hasn't had the best end of the season. So, him being replaced became a bit of a big story yesterday as to his state of mind.
Here's a hoary old chestnut for you, James. Here's Simon Riddicks and Darren Spice both tweeting, what's up with De Rossi's shirt, the long sleeve, short sleeve look? That goes back to the arm injury?
There's all kinds of speculations as to what this is. You know, whether he suffered an arm injury, whether he has a tattoo on his arm, which is which you know might
saucy one,
might be a little bit saucy. Yes,
right.
Or there's superstition whether it's good luck. You know, after to have one long sleeve and one short.
Do you want some Confederations Cup shirt trivia?
No, I don't think we do. Actually, Barry, let's move on. Oh, go on then.
Well, Mario Balotelli is one of four players at the Confederations Cup now whose shirt number is the same as his current total of goals for his country.
Wow. I'm
four. Gerardo Torrado of Mexico is number six, has six goals. Aldo Nigris Mexico's 9-9, and Diego Godin from Uruguay is 3-3.
Right.
Have you been following Balotelli on Twitter?
Yes.
It just seems to be, you know, he was smashing El Shaarawy at ping pong the other day.
Oh, yeah.
Revealing that El Shaarawy farts quite a lot.
Oh.
And then beating various people on various different games.
Right.
It's, you know, it's just how he rolls.
He seems to be in a good place right now, Mario.
Yeah.
Yep. It's good. Well, Rio de Janeiro, don't go much better, do they? Now, meanwhile, many hundreds of kilometres to the north in Recife, it was the Spain bots against Uruguay. This was dizzying stuff. It was like they just teleported in from the future to show us how the game's going to be played. I don't know, I probably skipped a couple of Spain games, but I thought they looked better than they have for ages. Some question marks over their hunger and that, but no.
Yeah, I thought they looked absolutely phenomenal. I thought that the first half was really, I mean, it was gorgeous to watch. I've been sporadically bored by them, I suppose, at times in the last 3 years. But yesterday, I thought, was in large part, it was stunning. I thought it was great stuff.
Mm. Yeah, playing with a proper centre forward, of course.
Yeah. Without wanting to take anything away from how good they were, I thought Uruguay were a mess.
Ah, yeah, what was that?
Unrecognisable from the team that won the Copa America and did so well at the last World Cup.
Yeah, they're struggling to qualify for the World Cup. And also, I think from that Copa America win, there were some young players coming through at the time who they thought would become the next generation and would go on, like Sebastian Coates or someone like that at Liverpool. Lodeiro, and they haven't, and even Gaston Ramirez, and as we saw at the Olympics last summer, they're not yet ready, or whether too much expectation has been loaded onto them or not, I don't know. But Cavani certainly he isn't able to replicate his goal scoring form for Napoli for his country. Suarez is excellent for Uruguay, but I mean they've had difficulty moving. Playing him and Cavani, whereas, you know, Suarez tends to have a good relationship with Forlan. Forlan's too old and kind of past it really now.
Right.
I think.
So. Mm-hmm. But a cracking free kick at the death anyway from Suarez.
Yeah. You know, sort of more forceful than Pirlo's, with a lot more whip. But yeah, again, you know, he scored a winner against France the other week. He's obviously, you know, probably adding more value to himself as he talks up a move or whatever.
Absolutely. Well, all sorts of moves being talked up at the moment, aren't they? The transfer market abuzz today with this notion that Paris Saint-Germain, in a kind of perfect storm of acronyms, PSG AVB, and they're going to sweeten that deal by throwing in Gareth Bale. I don't know if you've been across rumours today, have you, Barry?
No, I wasn't on rumour duty today.
It's an exciting story, though, isn't it?
It is, unless you're a Tottenham Hotspur fan, in which case it's quite a depressing turn of events.
I wonder who they would get in if AVB does go AWOL.
I don't know. Hmm? I'm trying to think of some
joking ears off the market.
Yeah.
JFK. Well,
you had to go and mention the joking ear business. How about that? Who saw that one coming, Simon Burton?
No, absolutely no one saw anything coming. And there was a point when Kinney was being interviewed on Sky yesterday when he just thought, have you just made this up? Have you just, like, are you just having a laugh on a Sunday afternoon? But no, it appears that would be actual true fact. Bizarre.
Right.
It's a beautiful, bizarre world.
For anyone who wasn't present in his glorious, 6-week reign last time around in Newcastle, just tell them why it would be so bizarre to see him back.
Well, his short reign at Newcastle was notable largely for the amount of cursing that he achieved in press conferences. And then he left with a health problem and has literally not been heard of since. He has been sequestered in his underground health bunker, building up his reserves of, I don't know. And now here he is again, back at Newcastle.
And very much in charge. And no one knows more about managing at Newcastle than he does.
Yes,
so he explained to the papers.
It was quite funny yesterday. I was in the office and there was... The cricket was being rained off, the tennis was being rained off, the football wasn't on till late, the golf wasn't on till late. They had to get a sports section out, and there was genuine concern that, you know, it would be like a 2-page pamphlet with no news of any description whatsoever. And then suddenly Joe galloped to the rescue and the day was saved.
Well, did anyone offer any explanation as to where this has come from?
Well, he's always been quite matey with the head honchos at Newcastle. And, I mean, his appointment has been greeted with almost universal derision because he's this sort of ludicrous cockney dinosaur. But a lot of the people who will pour scorn on this appointment are famously buried up the rectum of another ludicrous cockney dinosaur in the shape of Queen's Park Rangers manager. So, you know, if you're kowtowing to one and slagging off the other, it seems a bit unfair.
Is it fair to say that Harry's recent record, relegation notwithstanding, with QPR, is perhaps a little bit more consistent than Joe Kinnear's?
Recent record, he's left several clubs in total financial turmoil, apart from Tottenham, where he wasn't allowed to leave them in financial turmoil because their head bean counter and chief executive wouldn't countenance such irresponsible and feckless financial derring-do, or derring-do-do, as the case may be. But look, I'm not here. I don't want to slag off Harry Redknapp. I don't want to big up Joe Kinnear. I just think it is faintly hypocritical that a lot of the people who have already and will continue to pour scorn on Kinnear's appointment also brown-nose Harry to a huge degree. When it's the two aren't completely, are quite similar characters, really. Right.
It's also fair to say that Mike Ashley has had the last laugh, or a kind of intermediate laugh, previously. When Newcastle finished fifth, everyone said, good Lord, we didn't think he knew what he was doing. The guy was a joke. And look at this, he's obviously got a clear idea of how to run a club.
The strange thing is that there's been a bit of a change in their player acquisition policy over the last couple of seasons, and they've bought a lot of players from France, and it is certainly a more cosmopolitan squad than they were promoted with from the Championship.
Joking, no stranger to using French, of course, particularly in press conferences.
Well, there is that. But it's as if the two sides of the playing side of the club are being managed in totally different ways by different people. You've got all these foreign players coming in, and then you've got Alan Pardew being given 8-year contracts, and now Joe Kinnear being appointed above him. A proper, hoary, old-fashioned British manager.
I interviewed Neil Warnock recently, me and everyone else, because he's promoting his book and he's been everywhere.
And what's it called?
It's called The Gaffer.
The Gaffer.
And it's a sort of behind-the-scenes look at managing clubs. And I actually found it very entertaining and provided some good insights into what it's like, particularly when he was at QPR on transfer deadline day, and all these offices and boxes and whatnot at Loftus Road, just each one had a player and an agent in it, and he was basically running the length and going in and out and in and out, trying to...
Well, one or two more on standby in the car park, weren't they?
Probably. Warnock was talking, you know, I asked him if he was done with managing, and he said he probably was, although I'm not convinced. But he reckons that there's a lot of clubs now that have people in charge who don't really know what they're doing, don't know how to run a football club properly, and he reckons that just being director of football at one of those clubs, providing advice, you know, when you are experienced, and he reckons that's a role that needs to be filled and people like him are ideal to fill it. You wouldn't be interfering with the manager. Again, I don't believe that for a second where Warnock's concerned. But Kinnear, while he has been out of the game for, whatever, 6-7 years.
Is it that long?
Pretty much.
Apart
from his stint at Newcastle. But he is presumably very well connected, although I believe quite unpopular.
All right, well, fascinating. Fascinating turn of events up there in the northeast. Moving on, Brad 96 says, why is there an incredible lack of guardian coverage of the under-21 Euros? It's arguably a better tournament than the Confederations Cup. Well, should we throw a bit of a bone?
Sorry, I beg to differ there, right? Because we had Stuart James out there.
There you go.
Covering it with considerable aplomb.
Is
until England's
final?
Exit. Oh, I don't know if he's still there or not.
Right, right.
But okay, I think most of the English papers had a correspondent out there, like Henry Winter was out for The Telegraph, Stuart James for us. And they came home after England exited.
Winter is coming home. Yeah.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
Anyway, right. But, of course, the final, the tournament is still rolling on without England. And what game in prospect on Tuesday as Italy's young prospects take on Spain's young prospects? Yikes.
Yeah, it's a repeat of the Euro 2012 final.
But with juniors. It's a bit like Bugsy Malone.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are little urchins and stuff like Insigne, who's probably been Italy's player of the tournament. I think, in general, Isco has been has just been fantastic for Spain. But
sorry, is he not at the Confederations Cup because Mark Lawrence said that? He'd quite like to see him come onto the field. Yeah.
There's 22 players to keep track of, Barry. That's a lot.
I suppose.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, Italy have won that tournament more than any others. Yeah. And there's been some time since their last one. I think the members of it were Pirlo and Gilardino. And, so, yeah, I think they think they've got quite a good chance. Although you look at Spain's 11, and it's just... I mean, the big criticism of Italy's under-21s is so few of them have play for clubs in Serie A, have Champions League caps. I think, you know, you're looking at Insigne and Verratti, really. One of the interesting things is that under-21 back line, including the goalkeeper, all are on Inter's books, but none of them play for Inter. They're all on loan in Serie B, which is pretty... tells you a lot about Inter Milan. They have all these promising young players and... Yeah, they just waste them essentially. So, yeah, but it's quite interesting because Italy again sort of has the same problems as England in terms of, you know, there is this foreigners play more minutes in Serie A than Italians. The demographic is greater in favour of foreigners to Italians, and yet, you know, Italy still is able to produce a very good little team. Really
interesting point. Right. Okay. Well, speaking of. Island nations with largely amateur teams. On to Tahiti, who Monday, before any of that exciting under-21 stuff, take on Nigeria. Wow. What do you think, Simon? Has this piqued your interest, this?
I mean, I'm really interested in Tahiti.
What kind of scoreline do you think we're going to see?
That's one of the interesting things. I mean, if the risk when you sit down as a neutral to watch any game of football is that nothing might happen. Ooh. And that your time will be wasted. And I think that watching Tahiti in the Confederations Cup, that is a very negligible risk. You can't guarantee goals, but you can guarantee goals when Tahiti are playing, surely. I noticed their record defeat was a 10-0 against New Zealand.
Do you think that could be under threat, that record?
And I just wonder whether FIFA have had a word with the other teams and just said, let's not embarrass the competition here.
Barry was raising this very issue this morning, weren't you, Barry?
Yeah, well, even if there hasn't been a FIFA directive to go easy on them, if you're playing against them, you know, say Spain against Tahiti, that this could be like a horror show for Tahiti. Now, they're obviously delighted to be there, but if you're Spain, do you go, right, we'll get 7-9 and then just leave them. We won't bully them and
think
score
you
20.
Would. And
but
yet...
this is a proper tournament. Mm. These goals count. You can boost your stats.
Soldano,
your
for
boots.
Example, could...
But, I mean, this game against Nigeria, I don't know how bad Tahiti are, but Nigeria... are coming into this tournament pretty much in disarray. They've had the row over player bonuses. They've only arrived yesterday, so they're jet-lagged.
Wow, they only arrived on Sunday?
Yeah. They are
missing a bundle of players as well,
missing
right?
a bundle of players. They've no Emmanuel Emeniki, who's their top scorer in the African Cup of Nations, no Victor Moses, no Kale Uchu. So, but it's still difficult to imagine them not winning. Right. And not winning by a lot.
17 games unbeaten. Yeah.
I think Tahiti will score against Nigeria.
Hooray!
Which is what they set out to do. That's their dream, is to score a goal.
Score a goal at the Confederations Cup.
Looking at the press coverage or what coverage they've had on kind of online, there's been lots of... there was a press conference yesterday with the coach, whose name I can't pronounce, where he talked about the member of his squad who's employed to climb coconut trees.
Yeah, he wasn't terribly specific. He's employed to climb things. He climbs mountains and coconut trees.
Yeah, and there have been lots of kind of vaguely Mickey-taking and derogatory headlines about the coconut tree climber.
Right.
And I just think, so here's this guy. He climbs mountains and coconut trees.
Which mountains are there in Tahiti? Are there mountains? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Right.
He is employed in a conservation scheme in a beautiful island state in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. He climbs coconut trees and mountains all day long. And who are we to laugh at him? I mean, what?
Yeah, apparently, he apparently said that football training was far too easy,
right,
compared with what he does in his day job, you know, in terms of running mountains and climbing up trees. He was like, is this it? Yeah, this is, yeah, I could do this all day if you want. So, but
wow.
I think all these professional footballers in their costed lives and their. Their multi-million pound hideaways and their inability to go and live even for an evening a real life in a real part of a real town lest they be pestered by real humans.
Right.
And here are these Tahiti players with real lives in a beautiful part of the world, and kind of the joke's on us, isn't it?
Right, I think absolutely it is.
I guess their one professional player said to the rest of the squad that, right, you know, this is 2 weeks of your life and then you're going back to work. So this isn't for them the job. You know, it's a privilege to be there.
Mm.
But you know, their lives don't depend on it and that sort of thing.
Right, unlike the other teams who do face
certain death. Yeah, but yeah, I think, you know, some of us would like to have just the opportunity to play against Iniesta, be ruined by Iniesta or something like that.
Ooh.
See, ruined people
though?
Last night. I don't. Well, I think so.
I don't know.
Couldn't you play on the same side as Iniesta and watch him ruin somebody else and get?
Well, I'm not good enough to be in. Well, I'm not good enough to be in Tahiti's squad. To be fair,
right.
But I certainly couldn't get anywhere near Spain.
What's the biggest hiding you've ever got in a proper football match?
Oh, I don't know.
I was on a team that lost 13-1 once.
Ooh.
And it was very, very depressing.
Yeah.
And, you know, now admittedly we weren't playing against world-class opposition, so that wasn't a particular thrill. But just getting absolutely slaughtered is not nice.
No. Nah. Well, let's hope.
Particularly
we don't
when you're the left back and your man scores 6 goals.
Right.
When I was in Italy, I used to play calciotto, which is 8-a-side, and our team lost every game. We lost 15 games, and then the one game that I didn't play in, our team won, which was more humiliating than losing 15
right.
games in a row.
That is humiliating, isn't it?
Yeah. Moving on. So,
right.
Apparently the Tahiti coach has been making them train in trying to project the noise of 80,000 people shouting at them, which sounds pretty, you know, because I think when they had an under-20 tournament, when they were all lining up for the national anthem, to hear the national anthem, all the players started breaking down and crying.
Really?
And the coach, who's French, was looking at them just going, oh, we're dead already. It's finished. It's over. Because they just didn't know how to handle the pressure. Or not the pressure, but the occasion.
Right. What kind of national anthem is it that induces these emotional scenes?
Well, because it's French Polynesia, I think they add Le Marseillais.
Do they?
But that changed. And so they created this song. But I think it's just... It's set to no music. They just sing. So when they had the under 20 tournament, they had to then foist a melody onto it, which doesn't really work. I think anyway.
All
but
right.
do we have any idea how? Like they qualified for this by winning the Oceania Cup,
right?
Beating the Solomon Islands 1-0 in the final. And now one of those teams beat New Zealand in the semi-finals.
Mm-hmm.
New Zealand went out of the last World Cup. They were one of two teams in the last World Cup who were unbeaten.
Mm.
Spain being the Spain being the other. So, you know, can they play a bit or are they
clearly
just
they can.
A pub team?
And
or?
They can run up mountains and climb trees as well, which is not something you could necessarily say of Nigeria. I don't know. It could be that football's going to be set for one of the big shocks this Monday evening. Whatever, we certainly will be here on Tuesday morning to tell you all about what we made of it. So do join us then. But that's it for today's Confederations Cup Football Daily. Many thanks, James Horncastle.
Thank you,
Simon Urton, Mary Glendenning, and producer N. We'll be back on Tuesday.
Won't eat ack.
No, you won't, will you? When will you be, Ack?
I'm off.
Oh, when will you?
I'm off for a week. I'm going to Ireland for a wedding this weekend.
Huh?
I may be gone sometime.
Right. Have a super time then, everyone at Barry's wedding, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Not my wedding.
Not your wedding, but you know. Yeah. Cheerio. CCFD with AC Jimbo. Woof.